This week on Chicago Beer Pass, Nick and I are at Metropolitan Brewing, hearing about their last 10 years of making beer in Chicago and what you can expect at their anniversary party this month. These last 3 weeks of the week, what'd you make it to?
Yeah, because you know, you got a cork popped out, boom, and it flies like fucking 10 feet. We're like, yeah, let's do it.
The legend, Mr. Pete Crowley.
I love Pete Crowley, man.
How's that beer? It's what you think it is.
It'll be like the stuff you hear. You ever go to, every time you go to Floyd's, all the music sounds like this.
Raw, raw, raw.
Hey, and welcome to Chicago Beer Pass. I'm Brad Chmielewski.
Brad, what's up, man? I'm Nick White.
And we're on location with a huge crew.
I think this is the biggest crew ever, man. We're at Metropolitan Brewing. You know, their 10th anniversary is coming up. We are here with Doug Hurst, Tracy Hurst, and the Lost Boys.
Woo! Woo!
Yeah. Oh, boy.
We're like eight deep in studio.
I know. Yeah, if you guys want to go around and introduce yourselves around the table, so everyone...
This is the entire production crew at the brewery. I'm Doug.
Hi, Doug.
I'm Brandon Baker, operations manager.
Tracy Hurst, co-founder, president.
Peter Anderson, I make wort.
Josh Copley, I put beer into vessels.
Logan Lippincott, Kellermeister.
Man, I think this is the most people we've ever had.
I'm excited. And, you know, so in the past, right, we sat down with, you know, Jonathan Collin from Peace, the Half Acre crew, you know, Gabe Magliaro, and now we're here with Tracy, Doug, and the Lost Boys, and this is like classic Chicago. Like, when I thought about guests, I always wanted to have, like, the core guest on, so I'm kind of excited about this.
And now, the 10th anniversary party coming up, it seems like... You guys hit a stride here with the new space that we're in, and it's actually a warm office.
How are you guys selling into this space?
These windows are glass, not plastic.
Yeah, the old brewery that we moved out of a little over a year ago now, our office was a tent, as you might remember, and it was a little cold in the winter. Some space heaters helped, but that was about it. And
I came across a picture the other day of when, if you remember, the really hot summer bottling days, and we would just be excruciating, so we would open the cold room and put industrial fans in front of the door, just blow the cold air throughout it was totally inefficient, but we were so fucking hot.
Now, obviously, we have like a real lunchroom.
Yes.
In that, a lunchroom, office, and meeting room. Now we have like a real office. We have a real workshop. We have a real lab space. And they're all heated and cooled. It's, we're totally spoiled.
Yeah.
You just have to close the door. That's all.
Beer's still good. We're spoiled.
Actually, in Rockwell, the beer is... I didn't think I'd ever say this about your guys' work, but it's actually better. I think you have better tools and upgrades, and Logan has a lab now, and I'm noticing out in the world selling the beer that I love our beers, but lately when I crack a crankshaft, it's like I go back to when we first made it 8 years ago, like, holy shit, this beer is so good. So I would propose that you guys are even doing a better job out of Rockwell.
You guys are able to dial it in, finally, in this joint. Were there other places you seriously considered before landing here at this beautiful facility right off the river here in Avondale? What are some of the other places you thought about landing?
I think we looked at every building in the city. And as was the case the first time we did this, there's a lot of buildings in this town that need to be torn down. We've been looking at this space for probably 4 years, close to, and when I first looked at it, it was a wreck. I did not see how a brewery could move into this space, but our developer got involved in this project, bought the whole complex, and has a development vision for this old industrial building we're in here. This is once a tannery. Apparently, there were lots of tanneries along the river. They would like ship the hides up from the stockyards down there.
Right, and this was the one.
So it was built in 1880.
Going back to your question, one notable space we looked at in the early days was the space in Bowmanville that Half Acre now occupies.
No kidding.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
That was a nice space. It was too big for us. So, yeah, that one didn't need to be torn down as much. But we would have only taken part of it, and they ended up, they took the whole thing and have turned it into a beautiful brewery up there, of course.
Yeah, was a good way for that to land. This space, our developers worked with us. They're the same people behind Bridgeport Art Center.
Oh, right on.
So it's the group of folks who are all about taking old manufacturing space in Chicago and retrofitting it for contemporary manufacturing. Which aligns with us business-wise, but also philosophically, in that we all live here in Chicago, and we all want to work here, and we all want to make things here. So teaming up with this particular group really fit with us philosophically, and they've worked really well with us as we're getting, you know, growing into the space, because even though it's big and we have a lot more resources, we still make beer that takes twice as long to make and is a little bit harder to make. So growing into the space is going to take us some time, and you know, to get our bearings and you know, decide what we want to do from here. But already the projects that we're coming up with, because we have the space, are really exciting. We just work with a skeleton crew, and we work with the resources we have, and we work really hard to work smart. So when it comes to making big bombastic changes, we take them one at a time, make sure we get it right. And I think most notably is Logan's, well, all of ours, but you know, Logan really spearheads our coffee blend program. Okay. So, which is totally unique to this space. And because we're neighbors, Metropolis Coffee is the other anchor in this project.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
It seemed, you know, when I found that out, I basically looked at Logan back in Ravenswood and said, okay, coffee beer on at all times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's probably what caught our attention the last time we were here.
Yeah, the generator has become like one of my favorite beers. So we talk about this all the time.
We were talking about our beers of the year. We're like, man, remember that fucking generator?
Yeah.
Oh, Nitro and Metro. It blew us, man. We were like, there's, yo, we're coffee all
there's other, there's other good coffee ones, but the generator, I don't know, stands out to both of us as like our favorite.
It's a liver after my own heart.
Well, I'll let Logan talk about it, you know, in terms of mechanics if you want, but in terms of what we do, the team, after so many years together, we've really come to the notion of doing things with finesse and with purpose. And everything that we do, you know, Peter does a lot of experimentation in on our pilot system, and Logan, all across the board, no matter how wacky, whether it's a smoked beer or a coffee beer, it's going to be very well balanced and very easy to drink. And it just makes me feel good to try the beers that the guys are churning out, because they all kind of bought into Doug's idea of the German aesthetic of being very quaffable beer. And the coffee beer is no different. You did some very unique things, actually, to make that happen.
Yeah, our beers are pretty unique. Why is that?
Good job, Dad.
This is Logan. I feel our coffee beers in particular, but, you know, obviously as a graduate of the School of Hearst, my objective is subtlety and balance and also impact. So when I was approached to start working with coffee in beer, one thing that I always loved about Metropolis was the confusion that people had.
We just like
Metropolis.
I mean, their coffee is Metropolis, but the confusion connected. And when I found out that they suffered from the same ailment, then I was just thrilled and over the moon. And it's just been a natural partnership ever since. So It begins with a conversation between myself and the head roaster, Chris Petrovich, over at Metropolis. We start talking about what kind of flavors we would like to express or like to discover or explore or even just compare or contrast. in a certain beer, base beer or coffee. And it really, really, it's kind of, the sky's the limit, because coffee's made all over the world, beer's made all over the world, and I think the union of the two is, it was just an accident waiting to happen. But underneath it all is a unifier, which is Justin Doggett on the north side in Grandview. And he runs Kyoto Black, and Kyoto is a technique, a cold extraction technique from Japan that he has adopted and co-opted, wholly his own practice here in Chicago. Super unique. It is not cold brew. It is not cold steeping. It is a slow drip method, and it just takes every nuance, every characteristic out of the bean and puts it into a cup. And it is beautiful. It is mind-blowing. Yeah. And when combined with the base beer, you can get products and results that you could not even envision.
So is that the type, is that the kind of brew you use for all the coffee beers, or is that?
Yes. Just, okay. Yeah, exclusively.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
The other part of the coffee beers that I think is important is that all of them are served on nitro, which means there's very little CO2 in them, so they're not carbonated like a normal beer. They're served on nitro, which is low carbonation, and it really lends to a much smoother coffee beer, because if you carbonate coffee, it really pulls all the bitterness out, and you just get this nasty flavor. But with the coffee beers on nitro, they're just creamy smooth.
That was something that Justin kind of suggested from the get-go. I remember our initial meetings.
Yeah, you guys don't fuck around, man. I remember the reason I got into Metro.
Yeah, we did.
Actually, most of what we do is just fucking around.
It's all yeah. Fucking around. Yeah, I think, like, you know, because I remember the first time I saw Doug Hurst, it was like at, you know, Oak Park Microbrew Review, and I'm like, well, you know, Lager brewery, what's up with that? He's like, what do you want me to do? Make another fucking IPA? Right? And then I would go to, like, you know, what's that? The Firkin, Fest.
Yeah.
Those guys.
And I mean, Night of Living Ales.
Right. Yeah. And then, you know, like, you would have a Finch Firkin and have, like, all this huge curry. And it was like this big bomb of a beer. And then you have this Metro Nitro. And it was like, it was subtle. It was purposeful. And I remember going to the old brewery. And, like, they were like, yo, we're going to have lemon crankshaft on. And we're gonna do yoga. So I'm like, well, I'm going. And it's the only time I felt really bad that I didn't have a yoga mat, you know, because then I didn't get the lemongrass. The lemongrass.
Oh, shoot,
Nick, we always have extra green sacks kind of laying around. Yeah. Got you.
But that,
a little scratchy.
That Night of Living Ales used to be called the Real Ale Fest. I've been going to it since like 1999 or 2000.
Brag. 1999. Oh,
brag.
But no, that fest is one of the reasons I decided to open a brewery, because I just fell in love with cask condition ales, which is weird since we became a lager brewery, but
that will serve cask condition.
We will, yeah.
But yeah, we do cask condition lagers.
But the 10 years now has been quite a ride in Chicago brewing, the community and the amount of breweries now. I know the first time I went there was during the Spike the Breweries thing, and there was
oh yeah.
Oh, what, 10 breweries, and 3 of those were Goose Island at the time.
So. Right, Brad, if I may interject, yeah. I just want to give a personal shout out to you and Ken from Hopcast, because it was you and Ken's event organized that I was interning at another brewery at the time that I met Doug and Tracy on that bike tour. And then kept bugging them.
That's
them
awesome.
Until I started volunteering with them.
That's awesome.
And then until they started paying me.
That's cool. Yeah. There was,
to do what I get to do every single day.
Wait, that's amazing. You get paid?
You gotta rework some stuff.
He knows this.
But yeah, 10 breweries at that time,
yeah.
10 years ago to what are 167 in the Chicago?
Basically,
land?
Anytime yeah, someone belches, another brewery opens up.
Yeah,
big high five. Thank you.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Why do you guys think this works? I mean, because, you know, Beta Brau, they had an all-lager brewery, right? I think our friends at Motor Row, they make all-lager beers. You know, we even had Frank on the show, and Frank invites other brewers to come out, you know, help fill those tanks. Lagers are an interesting pocket in beer. Why do you think this project is rolling in a way that we haven't seen anything else roll for lagers in this town in a long time? You know?
That's a good question. Because we're lucky?
Too foolish to stop?
Yeah, that's probably it. Well, I think we were one of the early people into the game in Chicago of the new wave, so to speak. I think that helps. But also, we've always had this philosophy or mentality, I guess, of being cash strapped and growing slow and steady. And it served us. I mean, we scraped by. We've been scraping by for 10 years. That's what I've been saying lately. And what that means is we're still here.
I think too, meeting any one of us, looking at our social media, coming to a party or an event, it is apparent meeting anyone in this room that we are completely jazzed about the beer. There's no derivation, there's no hesitation. And I think that beer is business, and some people will open breweries because the numbers look good, and that's not illegitimate, but we rest our success and our day-to-day satisfaction with the fact that we all absolutely love the beer that we make. And I think that is probably, you know, back when Doug and I were first getting involved in craft beer like 20 years ago now, it was definitely the norm to know the brewers. You would go to Great Taste and meet Dan Carey, and, you know, you'd meet the guys behind Ale Asylum, and it was very much all about being authentic, all about knowing the people behind the beer, and that's what really tied the craft beer community together. And even though it doesn't always look like that now, we still have that mentality. Any of our colleagues need help with something, the guys jump up and help. Even at beer fests, we help each other out. And I think that people on some level will always respond to that authenticity and that sense of generosity. So I think on top of the beer being fucking amazing, undeniably, that people get a holistic look of us. And I think that works for folks. And I hope it does, because we honestly mean it and we're cool with putting it out there like that.
To me, I feel like you guys have always treated it like almost like the band. Like, this is our sound. We're not going to change. You guys,
that's what we were trying to say.
We're just like Soul Asylum, who still exists and has never change. Anyways,
had to get your Soul Asylum jam in.
No, I do think that sticking to our guns, or maybe it's not necessarily sticking to our guns, but I've always thought having a vision and limiting ourselves makes us more creative. Mm-hmm. Rather than just doing willy nilly whatever kinds of beers, we're specialists in what we do. Mm-hmm. And that definitely makes a difference.
Well, I can weigh in this regard that Doug and Tracy have helped me in such a way to not broaden my scope, but narrow my scope. And it has intensified the focus that I've had to project on innovation. When I'm looking at something or I'm thinking of a recipe, I mean, like one example would be Jetstream. That is not a Hef, is not a Berliner Weiss, it is not an American wheat. It's something wholly unto itself. And what I'm most interested in is creating styles where, like, within the North American subsets that reflect European origins, but still honor its own appellation or its own style guide, you know, like guideline subset. That's one of our seasonal wheat beers.
Yeah, which is soon to be packaged, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. The zero carbon package. I mean, yeah, we're going to submit it for COLA approval.
But the federal government is shut down. So
that, we can.
I read that on Facebook.
Are you going to say something?
No, Logan threw me off. It's so good.
Man, you are my bad, dude.
I want to go ahead.
So talk about like helping these other breweries. You have, I guess, people have come out of here, worked here, like Alarmist.
Yeah, we were at Alarmist, and he couldn't wait to say, "Yo, I got my thing going at Metro." Mm-hmm. You know,
I don't know.
We don't take any responsibility.
I never told him to start wearing Crocs as footwear.
We didn't tell him about kids either. That's his own thing.
These kids cost
I taught him how to use track clamps. I think he still knows how to do that.
I didn't teach Gary anything, but I love him.
Hi, Gary.
That's very much on purpose. The people in our world are great people, and you know, at any point, someone is going to need a hand with something. Mm-hmm. And if people want to learn, this is a great classroom to learn in with these people. I mean, at this point, after 10 years, I would consider us experts at what we do. So if you want to learn really tight SOP and how to run your brewery, this is the team to work with. For sure.
You'll also learn how to shotgun beers.
Absolutely.
Efficiently, effectively, if you can, and repeatedly.
If you can chug a liter in under 10 seconds, we might have a job.
We have a spot for you.
We have a spot for you.
Oh my God, this is what happens. This is what happens. We used to watch that shit and be like, dude, was that really dark?
It was really dark, Lord.
Everything I can attest was legitimate. I had witnessed at least half those filmings.
Yeah.
Where Doug puked on himself.
Or was there during the setup.
Yeah.
I will not confirm nor deny that.
Don't try chugging bottles of Dark Lord at home. Those were trained professionals.
That's a professional speaking.
With shotgunning beer, how have you guys resisted putting Metro beers in cans?
Great question.
Easily.
That's about
we already have a bottling machine, canning machine.
Machine.
That would have taken away from our beer money.
I don't know. It is the same as the rest of it, I guess, to me. It's like with bottles, I feel, are a more elegant solution to packaging than a can. That's just my own opinion.
We're
man.
More civilized.
So that's what we
shots fired.
We started with, okay. And that's what we do. And honestly, 10 years ago and before, bottles were what craft beer came in. Cans were like, what? That's like, that's what you put swill crap in. Obviously, that's changed a lot over the last 3 years, even 4 years.
Yeah.
Everyone's doing cans. Why aren't we switching to it? Honestly, because I think they're more elegant. Bottles are more elegant, and canning equipment is expensive. There's pros and cons to both bottles and cans, and people are like, oh, cans are better. No, bottles are better. No, there's pros and cons to both.
Also, again, we run on a skeleton crew. We run a very tight ship. And honestly, when it comes to taking on new projects, we're on triage all the time. And I think about Brandon and the projects he's got going, migrating our beer into a whole new package, just going to keep hitting the bottom of the list, you know, below all the other things that we would like to accomplish.
I think he could do it.
I have total confidence.
Yeah, 100% confidence.
I love packaging equipment that works.
This was at dawn, sir.
When did you guys become the Lost Boys? Because we were emailing back and forth, like, who's fucking the Lost Boys?
Yeah, Metro, like Metro wants to talk to Lost Boys. Like, who's emailing us?
There's a dear friend of ours who was a bartender at a an account in the suburbs, and I was not with the team. The team was all in a different part of the bar, and she came and said, "Tracy, one of your Lost Boys has passed out in the lawn." And I said, "That's awesome, just one." And then it just kind of stuck. And I sort of picture both Peter Pan and also the vampire movie. Depends on the day and how everybody feels.
Yeah.
One or the two. But it works. I like it. I think they have a renegade, so to speak, account on Instagram that Metro Lost Boys with a Z is absolutely hysterical and definitely gives you a glimpse of the back of the house work we do here.
Right on.
So,
how did the robots come about, and do they have names?
Oh, they have names.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they came about, I don't know how many years ago.
Way back.
Way back, Doug and Tracy put them together. They went to Home Depot, I think it was. And,
I did the bodies. Doug built the Jackie Box part.
Yeah, that was engineering on the fly. It would take me like to put the arm on and figure out how to do it. It took me like 2 hours to do one arm and then 20 minutes to do each of the additional three arms for, you know, two robots.
But we're all sci-fi nerds. That's, I mean, we all, Star Wars, Star Trek, I mean, gosh, is that all of them? You Heinlein. Mentioned a few tonight.
Yeah, Heinlein, yeah. Asimov.
Oh, you said Galaxy Quest.
Galaxy Quest.
Oh, we're talking, yeah, we're talking about movies.
But robots are rad, and they're like us, a sort of blend of industrial and human and organic, you know. So Metropolitan, all of that is part of that. And honestly, we just have a lot of fun. We named all the tanks after robots in this new place. And honestly, there's a tank I don't even know what the robot is.
Gigolo Joe?
Yeah, where's
Gigolo Joe? Is the pleasure bot that Jude Law plays in the movie AI. He's all shiny.
They were.
The tanks used to be named after Star Trek characters, but robots are cooler. Yeah. And this is coming from me, the Star Trek fan. What are some of the other robot names?
Well, going back to your question, our two beer pouring robots at the fest are Oscar and Mabel.
Yep. Okay. And the robot you see on all of our like artwork is Fritz.
For Fritz Lang.
Okay.
For Fritz Lang.
We also have a tank named Maschinenmensch, or Maria, aka.
It's a lot more angry German accent.
Maschinenmensch!
Maschinenmensch!
Doug Hurst, can you take us back to the first time you went to Germany? Right? Because a lot of this starts there, I would imagine.
Well, sort of. I went to brewing school at the Siebel Institute here in Chicago. The Siebel diploma program back at that time, you spent 6 weeks in Chicago in the classroom, and then you went to Munich, Germany, and spent 6 weeks at the Domens Institute, which is a German brewing school near Munich, and did more classroom and some practical work. And I was staying in this tiny room in downtown Munich and going out to the beer halls every night after class to drink the most beautiful lagers in the world. And at the time, frankly, I was kind of an IPA fan. This was back before IPAs were cool.
Doug's the OG beer hipster.
Can you insert an asterisk to a podcast?
In 2004. And but I was there, and I'm like, I need some hops in my beer. But what I came to realize and understand was the nuance that all of those German beers that many people think, or at least I did, they're all the same. They all just taste the same. But then I started drinking them there and trying them, and like I began to realize there's a huge difference between Helles and Kolsch and Pilsner. And they all look kind of the same, but when you start drinking them, you realize the differences, and even the differences between different breweries making the same beer. And then I came home and drank a couple IPAs, and then thought, wow, these are really too hoppy. So I went back to the store and got some Helles from Munich and tasted it, and it was crap. And the reason is because it had been sent over here, and shipping takes time, and then storage takes time, and then it sits on a shelf. So the beers get stale over time, and I thought, well, we need fresh lagers like those ones I was drinking in Germany. So that's kind of what led down the path to opening a lager brewery.
When you first told Tracy Hurst about this lager brewery thing, how did that work out?
I was the one that instigated the business plan. Yeah. Well, we were still together at the time, and I was, I had already been a sole proprietor in a couple of different, doing a couple of different projects. So I had written a couple of business plans and studied organizational behavior and business leadership in school, and instigated the business plan, and just kind of, we worked on it in tandem until we got it up and going.
I feel like there's a story I heard, like, you said you could brew lagers or Belgians, and Tracy was like, I hate Belgians.
Yeah, these Belgian beers are phenomenal. Yeah, you're probably still a great Belgian beer brewer. But if you look outside the United States, 9 out of 10 beers consumed around the world is a Pilsner. You know, across the major continents and countries around the world, Pilsner and lagers are how people drink. So to be a lager brewery, only an American craft beer, really, is it a radical idea. Everywhere else, of course you make a Pilsner.
Even in the United States, Pilsner is the number one beer still, because Anheuser,
well,
freaking,
I mean,
Busch,
the
and
idea
Miller
is that
still make, those are theoretically Pilsner beers.
The point being that people definitely gravitate at some point toward balanced, nuanced, easy to drink beer.
Yeah.
No matter how adventurous you get, you're always going to like a Pilsner. Mm-hmm.
Nick, you had a stab at what Crankshaft was.
Yeah, we were digging and we were talking about Crankshaft. Well, the three core beers, Crankshaft, Flywheel, Dynamo.
Negatron.
And I think it's Crankshaft at the time, a few years ago, was like the beer that you made the most of.
Is still that.
That's still the case.
Yep.
Yeah.
Magnetron is year round as well.
Magnetron, that's
the Blackwater.
Blackwater.
Crankshaft is outsell, or does it, like, is that the one people kind of go to the most?
Mm-hmm.
I think in my experience, it's a really easy conversion beer.
Okay.
Because I will be drinking at barbecues or at, like, you know, social events, and a lot of the time, as soon as somebody's dad finds out that I work at a brewery, they want to immediately come up and talk about beer and how much free beer I get, you know, or how little free beer I get. And when I'm able to hand them Crankshaft and they start drinking it, that's like such a bridge,
sure,
such an easy bridge to cross for them, that something that if you gave them an IPA or, you know, some other brewery's like version of a pils, it may be a little bit like too aggressive in flavor. Crankshaft Kolsch style, like, in the spirit of Cologne, this is something that is a little spicy, minimally hopped, and just beautifully balanced.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an easy sell. It's a gateway beer.
Yeah. To that, and to,
didn't
you know,
put it that way, but yeah, okay.
I call it a gateway beer to everybody. I think I've seen it in action over the years so many times at beer fests and with older family members who grew up on macro beers. That's what it is. If you're getting into craft beer, it's the perfect one to start with, for the reasons that Logan mentioned, being well balanced and approachable.
And from a sales rep standpoint, I often tell bartenders, buyers, and servers that it's an easy upsell, which means more tips and more money for their job and more money, you know, more money for their local beer community. So Crankshaft is one of those that if someone's on the fence, like the guys are saying, you can push them off the fence, and everybody
like
does
this
better.
Mm-hmm. Hey, here's this.
And
you
get a
once you go,
and you make more money.
Yeah. Once you go crafty, you never go back. You
know? I spent Christmas in Dyer, Indiana, you know, with my daughter and her family, and you know, Afterburner was in the fridge.
Nice.
Yo, I'm hanging out with them next Thursday. And then, like, Afterburner kind of led to this whiskey, and the whiskey led back to Afterburner, right? And it was such a good,
well,
good vibe.
Well played.
This was Christmas Eve. It was a good vibe. Yeah.
Nice.
Oh, but what I really dig is that, you know, like, it's not just, well, they're all lagers, but a lot of these lagers they're darker beers. Mm-hmm. They're heavier, you know, the Doppelbach. And I was looking over the lineup, and I was like, you know, Magnetron and Dynamo and the Dunk Arc Welder.
Mm-hmm.
It's like we're through you guys, right, we're able to take a deeper dive into German beers that aren't light pale lagers.
Mm-hmm.
It's the full spectrum.
Yep.
And that's really cool.
Thanks.
I don't know where I was going with that.
One of my missions is to show that lager doesn't mean light watery beer, that it is a full spectrum of beers. It's just the yeast that we use and that we ferment it colder that makes the difference. And you know, it's a little crisper and cleaner and has different kinds of flavors in it, but it can be light, it can be dark, it can be strong, it can be low alcohol, but it's still lager and still awesome.
Yeah, and that gets lost. The range of lager gets lost.
Like, we just released a Generator Doppelbock. It's our winter seasonal. And that one is 8% alcohol. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of dark-ish.
I think, too, we all fell into silence because we all work really hard here. And we're all really dedicated. And the things that we take for granted every single solitary day, and that I tell every day, and Megan, our sales rep, tells people every day, to sit and have someone in the know we've known for 10 years or more really fucking get it. I think we all just wanted to rest on that for a second. Sure. Thank you. Like, that is awesome.
Nick, we're basking in that revelation.
Sitting in it.
Right. It's so true, man. It's so true.
So the 10-year anniversary party on the 19th.
Well, speaking of beer, we made a special beer for it. Yeah, and
we made a special beer.
Our conversation.
Yes, I've been joking with Doug that this beer is our first step toward becoming a pale ale only brewery. Not really. So probably in our old space, somebody gifted us a pound of Cascade hops. We don't use Cascade hops because they're very aggressive and they don't really fit the lager styles that we do. But we had them, so me and Logan worked up this little like pilot batch recipe.
Logan and I?
Ooh. Me and Logan.
Oh!
You don't say me worked up.
Me worked up.
No grammar correcting.
I don't do English. I didn't really go to college.
Everybody but we worked up this. Wants, by the way,
we worked up this pilot batch recipe that would just use whole pound of Cascade hops. And we envisioned it as like a ripoff of like a California Common, like an Anchor Steam type beer,
okay. But
really hop forward. And we brewed it and we used the entire pound of Cascade hops in like 15 gallons of beer, which is a lot, way more than we would normally use in a beer. But when you're doing a test batch, you can get away with doing anything because it doesn't matter because you're not going to sell it. And then we drank it and we're like, oh, this is like the best pale ale that's ever been made.
But it was actually a lager.
But it was actually a lager because it was fermented with lager yeast just at a warmer temperature. And there were a couple more iterations of this beer as time went on, with Cascade hops, without Cascade hops. And we kind of realized that our lager yeast actually tastes pretty good when you ferment it a little bit on the warm side. Like when you change a yeast's normal temperature that it likes to ferment in, you can go in one of two directions. One, you get these really weird estery off flavors that just taste like absolute hot garbage. Or you can get these really unexpected yeast flavors that are pleasant and workable, and you just have to figure out what to do with them. And that's what our lager yeast did, is it made this very nice sort of pleasant flavor profile that had a little bit of a fruitiness to it, but nothing super aggressive.
Interesting.
And so when the time came to brew a 10th anniversary beer, like, what's more perfect than this style that was like perfected in America, this common style perfected by Fritz Maytag at Anchor way back in the day from this old recipe he found these German people had brewed. It's like, that's just the perfect beer for our 10th anniversary beer, is this like old school American style made by German immigrants. Like, and so we didn't put any Cascades in it, but it is basically a pale ale.
Awesome. Okay.
More or less, but with lager yeast. And I'm super, it's called 10th Gear.
Yeah. Right on. Okay.
To celebrate our 10th anniversary, and it will be available at the party for the first time anywhere.
Yep.
And then if there's any left, maybe we'll allow it to be released limitedly. But you better come to the party if you really want to try it.
Yeah.
This is for sure the first big party in this space.
We're using the event space in the project.
Because when you walk into the space, it kind of reminds you of the there's one in Denver where Cricket Stave is. And it kind of reminds you of that complex.
Yes, the Crooked Stave complex. It's like an old industrial building, and then there's like little spaces along with different businesses in it. Is that the one you're referring to?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So when you walk in, the space, the private space area, the party's going to be there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Closer to Metropolis. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
I was just going to talk about the party. We have the special beer. We've been archiving some of our barrel-aged beers that we'll be pouring. Peter curated a list of, we're going to have the core beers, the four core, we're going to have Generator, we're going to have barrel-aged beers, we're going to have some Firkins, we're going to do two of our coffee beers. In fact, we were just talking about that today. We still haven't decided. We have a couple of good choices. We're going to have some food from the Rattler and from Three-Legged Tacos. We're going to have coffee, of course, music, and we're going to have some interactive, fun things to do. We're going to do a fundraiser for the Chicago Brewseum project. That's important to me and the guys. I mean, it's a huge project that will really lend a lot to the Chicago beer industry.
Yeah, man, and cheers to Liz Garibay. I know they just had a launch downtown at the Field Museum.
Yep.
Right on.
But this team in Metropolitan has worked really closely with Liz on that, so we're going to do a fundraiser for her and for the Brewseum. So there's going to be a lot to do, and even, we're going to have, a DJ, we're going to have a band, and all of us will be there drinking with people and just celebrating the fact that we're just always shoulder to the wheel around here. It's nice to invite everybody over and show them what we're doing and just kind of relax and enjoy the hard work.
Can I just say 2018 Cherry Generator Doppelbach aged in bourbon barrels?
Oh.
Like that's a thing that's going to happen.
Again, that's just
like this is a real thing.
I'm
here to let you know that's a thing.
Yeah. Right?
Did you say Cherry Generator Doppelbach?
Yeah, aged in bourbon barrels.
Bourbon barrels.
Yeah. Not only has it been aged,
they're wood.
I think I'm going to go to the party now.
You, sir, don't have a choice.
Oh, well, yeah, that's right.
Well, I can't check in on Untappd fast enough. Yeah.
Don't really like cherry or beer. One bottle cap.
Oh, that's his Untappd review.
That's my Untappd review.
Oh, that's awesome. But yeah, tickets are for sale on a ticket website, and you can come to the tap room, and if you don't want to pay any fees, we're just going to charge you the face price for the ticket, so you can pick them up here.
That's a good call. Mm-hmm. That's a good call.
Give people a choice.
Those are 10yearslager.eventbrite.com. No spaces, please.
It's also our Instagram profile link. You can go through our Instagram profile too.
Ten years, man. I think there was like maybe five breweries in this town 10 years ago.
So yeah, well, cool. I think Goose Island was the only other production brewery in the city at that time when we started.
Half Acre opened up Lincoln City.
Half Acre opened about 2 months after us.
Contract brewing there.
Yes, they had beer on the market, but it was brewed up in Wisconsin. But
those beers aren't made anymore. So.
They had Over Ale.
Gossamer.
They had Half Acre Lager.
Half Acre. Oh man, they were ahead of the curve on that, huh?
Yeah.
Just calling a beer lager.
I actually miss Gossamer.
I like Gossamer too.
Still around. Dave, if you're listening,
we sat out with Half Acre. We're like, yo, so what's up with Gossamer?
And it was still around.
Onward.
Yeah. They retired it.
It didn't have enough hops in it for them.
Wait, was it at the?
I'll pick this conversation.
Big North.
Yeah,
was it a Big North?
They brought it back.
Maybe they did.
Oh,
I saw it.
So we won't talk. We'll leave some meat on the bone. We won't talk about streaking the Capitol.
Let's talk about streaking the Capitol.
I can neither confirm nor deny
streaking the anniversary
those
party?
Rumors. I don't answer any questions. I'm sorry.
Let's just say that I allocate $400 for fines every Great Taste of the Midwest weekend.
And you'll need more.
Which we found out does not even cover bail.
So, bail is a bit of an issue, but we've been able to cover some other mishaps.
Very important to keep your clothes with you when you're running. In the off chance this that you need key. To put them on after you get arrested.
You hear that, Greg? Sorry. I didn't say that.
You're very easy to find after. Man. All right.
If this is intriguing to you and you end up at Great Taste of the Midwest, stop by our booth and we'll fill you in on the details because it happens on Saturday night.
Most of the time the booth number is 419. We never get the number we request, but
we never get the number we request.
We're the neighbor.
Yeah.
We always do this after the Great Taste of actual event on Saturday night so that if anyone happens to get arrested, we don't have to worry about whether we'll be able to be at the Great Taste or not.
We have the full team
at
that
time. We've both been at that party, and I think, you know, I love the summer. For me, that's number one. In most years, that's always number one.
The beer fest?
Absolutely.
Yeah, number one party.
I've literally been to beer fests across the country, and Great Taste is takes the cake. Not even just for the people who are there, but the way the breweries are treated, the appreciation they show us.
And you're outside. Just it just adds
to the location. The location alone, mm-hmm. but having great beer featured alongside all these friends.
Yep.
That just makes it beer after year.
Little bands that play all up and down.
Yeah.
It's perfection.
They do a really good job of it.
We are.
While you're eating bacon on a stick or whatever.
Awesome. Nick, I think this was a great way to kick off the new year.
Dude.
The first episode.
Are you kidding me, man? I miss Avondale, man. I was here for 4 years, man. I'm at Rogers Park now, so it's always good to get back here, man. We always talk about depth of brewery in this town and how it separates us from other cities, and we are lucky to live in the same town that Metropolitan Brewery is in. So,
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Prost.
Prost. 2019. Woo!